Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY on this snowy Wednesday, January 23rd. We're live here in the studios of 88.5 KRFY for the morning show, the Wednesday edition, and I'm Susie Prez, and I'm really excited because I'm smiling at my co-host, Julie Calamine. Julie, we normally don't get to do this together. I'm really excited.
I know it. It's a rare treat, Susie. Good morning, and thank you for inviting me on a Wednesday.
Well, we're having a special morning show today. Why don't you tell our listeners about who our guests are and what... This is Garden Talk, our first edition for 2019. So you could introduce our guests. They could say hi.
I'd be happy to. Our first guest is Manuela Eyring, and she's a horticulturist and also the owner of Florescape Nursery in Sagal. Good morning, Manuela.
Good morning.
So glad to have you here. And our second guest this morning is Dr. Preston Andrews. He's Emeritus Professor of Horticulture from Washington State University. And we're so lucky to have you here this morning, Preston.
Good morning, everyone.
Thank you for joining us.
And everyone may wonder, why are we doing Garden Talk in the middle of January? Well, it's a good time, and we're going to find out what we can do and some of the things we can start thinking about, because if you're a gardener or you're not a gardener yet, the information we're going to hear today will kind of inspire and bring about the start of our gardening season. But before we get to that, I think we should talk about what, Julie?
What the
weather. Okay. Well, we know it's snowy out, and I just say right now, the Lake Pend'Oreille School District and even the Sandpoint Waldorf School are closed today, just so you know that. You've probably already heard from your connections out there. And currently, the National Weather Service is saying we have 32 degrees. It's going to warm up, so all that snow, and I had about 8 inches at my house in town. I don't know what it's looking like out there in the country.
Pretty snowy south of town, and Highway 95 was not fully cleared, so I'm sure they're working on it by now. But it's a snowy morning, everyone.
I noticed that even my neighbors and all the people on my street, Main Street, were just crawling down the street through the thick snow. It made me really appreciate I have a Subaru. So today we can expect a high of 36 degrees, a chance of rain, snow, patchy fog, then patchy fog. That's what it says. Patchy fog tonight, 27. It looks like we've got some patchy fog tomorrow, high of 35, and on Thursday night, a low of 29. So rain, snow, kind of diminishing going into Friday and Saturday. I see a little bit of blue sky and a lot of fog. I don't think we're going to have more snow coming up, but it's going to get very wet and sloggy out there.
And we won't be seeing that moon for a few days. I know that's normally something your normal co-host, Chris, likes to talk about. So in his honor, I'll say we have, what, a waning moon, and we had a crazy eclipse a few nights ago.
Did you see it?
I only saw the very tail end of it because it was clouded in here.
Mm-hmm. Manuela and Preston, did you get to see the red wolf moon, full moon?
I did, and it was overcast. Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah, it was overcast at our place too.
Mine too.
Yeah.
But they had such great pictures on the internet. It was beautiful. And I think the next full moon eclipse is not until 2021. So
It'll be a while.
We'll just wait patiently. And that's the news on the weather. What else do we have, Julie?
Well, what's going on this weekend? I think that folks might be interested to know that the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society is having one of their monthly programs. And the guest this month is going to be, Steve Anderson. And the title is Nevada, More Than a Sagebrush Ocean. Should be fascinating.
Really learning. He worked out there for 20-some years through the Forest Service, and, you know, learning about the different places just in our general region. I think of Nevada as part of the inland center of the country. So
yes,
learning about it, and I think it's going to be a great talk.
Yes, and it'll be Saturday at the Sandpoint Community Hall at 9:45. So free and open to the public. Hopefully folks can make it.
Okay.
That's what I know, Susie. How about you?
Well, I know that there's a lot going on, and we have a great community. And
you were talking movies, maybe.
Movies, yes. The Green Book is coming to Sandpoint, folks. Starts Thursday night, and I think it's running for 3 nights. So check out the Panda website and find out when you can go see The Green Book, because it did get 5 Grammy nominations.
Wow.
Oscar nominations.
Yes,
not
Oscar.
Grammys.
That's music. Right.
Right. And we have to say that we like Viggo Mortensen. A couple years ago when he did the movie Captain America, we were able to have a benefit event at the Panada, 2 nights sold out, where he spent some time on stage and talked about making movies and his movie career a little bit. So
yes, so hopefully this will be every bit as good as the last movie. I'm looking forward to it.
People that have seen it have said incredible.
Yes. Well, let's move on to talking about gardens in winter and what the heck is going on in the middle of winter. Let's start with you, Preston, and just talk about where it all begins in the soil. And that's really an area of research for you. It was when you were a professor, correct?
Yes. Well, I started getting intimate with the soil when I was a landscaper in California, working in the Sierra foothills. Very rocky clay soil, very difficult planting conditions. And then I had opportunities to do landscaping in the Sacramento Valley, where the soils were so much better and easier to use. When I got my degree in horticulture, my emphasis was on plants, but I worked with some soil scientists over the years, and they we got more understanding of the soil. When the Organic Act was passed by Congress, we could have money to study that in more depth, and we learned a lot more about the soil after that.
And the living soil, basically, how alive it is and full of plants. Well, plants, of course, but animals.
There's probably more living life in the soil than on top of the soil. Soil scientists estimate that there are 100 million to a billion individual bacteria in each teaspoon of soil. So that is a lot of critters in the soil.
That's incredible, Susie.
And I'm just wondering about all those critters. What is the importance? I know they're important, but what is it about them that makes the fertility and the health of the soil so important?
Well, probably one of the main things they do is they convert organic materials into soluble forms that plant roots can then take up. And I'm thinking mostly of nitrogen. There are bacteria that convert the proteins and amino acids down into nitrates, and those are taken up by plants. So, and then there are bacteria and fungi that also feed other organisms that are beneficial in the soil. So it's like a whole ecosystem down there. And some of the bacteria are actually taken up by the plants and are incorporated into the plants and provide benefits, disease benefits, disease-fighting benefits for the plants.
Yeah, and so, you know, I think of plants making nutrients in the soil, as an example, legumes or something like that, but it sounds like the microbiota are even more important than plants working to improve soil.
Well, I would say it's a combination, obviously. The plant roots are breaking up the soil. They are decomposing, providing food for the microorganisms that are then providing these other benefits and nutrient benefits for the plants. So one wouldn't function without the other.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about how we might work on maintaining that soil health, because after we've talked a bit about that, we're going to talk about plants and what we might be thinking about for this climate in this area with Manuela.
And before we get to how to maintain it, what if your soil is basically not nutrient rich, isn't producing healthy plants? So both, how do you maintain healthy soil once you have it, but how do you create a healthy soil life under the ground that we can't really see? I'd like to take a thing and take a scoop and say, what's wrong with my soil? It's not making good healthy plants, even though it kind of looks good. And I put all kinds of stuff on it. But so how do you bring health back to maybe deficient soil?
Well, you definitely need food in the soil. And the main source of food in the soil is going to be organic materials.
And why not just throw some fertilizer down?
You could do that, and it's very fast acting, and it will get into the roots very quickly and give them a spurt of growth, but it will also leach into the groundwater, and it can run off into the stormwater, and in that regard, they become pollutants in our system. So it's best to mimic nature as much as you can, and by feeding them the natural foods that they would normally consume, which would be organic materials.
Which has been what's happened throughout the history of our Earth. Fertilizers, artificial fertilizers, are a pretty recent development in our world.
Those really came about with the increase in use of fossil fuels, and the ability to convert with fossil fuels nitrogen in the air into nitrogen for fertilizers.
So you mentioned putting organic materials into the soil. What does that look like? I a lot of times use fish emulsion or something like that, and that's topical. It's immediate. But how can you bring those organic? What are they? Some of those organic materials you're talking about?
Well, it would be the things you think about naturally occurring in a natural landscape. They would be leaves. They would be decaying plant parts. They would be the roots that are decaying from the plants that are dying. They could be additions, amendments, what we call amendments, that are things that we add to the soil, things that come from our homes, from our kitchens, can be made into compost. Manures are very essential for nitrogen availability. So all of those are parts of the amendments that can be added.
Sure. And that brings me to a question about soil testing, too. We all think, we do need organic materials, and we might see that our plants, some are flourishing, some are not. And if we need to know more about that basic soil condition, soil testing, what do we do? How do we find out about it? Where do we go?
Well, we're fortunate we have the University of Idaho that has an analytical laboratory in Moscow, and we can collect a sample following the directions that they provide and put it in a bag, send it down to Moscow with a payment. It's $45, I think, for a sample, and they will do a basic test that will give you your nitrogen and phosphorus, potassium, pH, organic matter content. I think you can get those bags and the directions at the Bonner County Extension office, and then mail them down to Moscow.
Okay. What does a good, healthy soil look like? Does it all look alike, or can it be a number of interesting-looking soils?
It can be quite varied. I did a lot of gardening and on the Palouse, which are very rich soils. They're what are called lust soils, which means they're windblown, mostly coming from the Columbia Basin, and they're very, very deep soils. And so those soils are very dark. They look dark. They're kind of like our prairie soils. But then if you go out into the center of Washington State or in other places, you'll find lighter soils that have more sand content. And those will be, they'll have a different characteristic, but they also can be very productive soils as well.
Okay, so we can't just assume if the soil is black, it's perfect, and if it isn't, it needs help.
We have that vision of a really dark, loamy soil as being the best soil. And, of course, in the Midwest and Iowa and places like that that grow corn and soybeans, it is some of the best soil on the planet.
Yes.
I just want to remind our listeners, this is The Morning Show right here at 88.5 KRFY, and this is Garden Talk, our first edition of Garden Talk. I'm Susie Prez. I'm here with Julie Calamine and our guest this morning, Dr. Preston Andrews and Professor Manuela Eyring.
I'm not a professor, though.
Okay. You're a horticulturist.
I'm a horticulturist.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. I just want to always keep it in mind. And if you're listening and you can't hear the whole broadcast, you can go to our website afterwards, and we'll have this posted as a podcast.
And we've been talking about soil health, and wintertime gardening. And Preston, before we began the interview, was telling us a bit about an experiment, not really an experiment, but what's happening in his garden and how he's working on his soil. And you were talking about green manure, weren't you?
Yes, that's another way that you can improve your soil and to maintain it, nurture it once it is in good health. So what I like raised beds in our situation here for small garden plots for vegetables because they dry out earlier in the spring. They warm up sooner. You don't have to bend over quite so much. They're so easier on your back. And they can be intensively worked. In other words, you don't have a big area that you have to manage the soil. Plus, our soils here, some of them are very have a barrier to root growth, and it's down about 1 to 2 feet and about 1 foot thick, and that is a restrictive area that is difficult for plant roots to penetrate.
What's that called?
That's called, the soil scientists call that a frangipane. And it's mostly made of silt here. Some people think it's clay, but because our soils are formed by glacier and lake deposits with a topping of loess, windblown, and volcanic ash, that layer down about 1 to 2 feet deep is the silt from those glacial outflows.
And it's a problem because water doesn't go through, or roots, all of the above?
If you're used to seeing standing water in your yard or in your field, then that's the reason, is because that frangipane, that impermeable barrier, is difficult for water to go through and almost impossible for roots to penetrate. Mm-hmm. And so there's usually an aeration problem. There's not enough oxygen for roots in that zone, even in the topsoil, until it dries out sufficiently. So one of the recommendations for these really dense clay soils or silt soils that have these barriers is to plant a combination of daikon radish, which is a brassica that has a root that penetrates through almost impermeable layers, and then a legume like a clover, or maybe you could use Austrian winter peas or something like that, and then a grass like rye, annual ryegrass. So a combination of those three as green manures can, over time, break up some of this hard pan, frangipane, that exists. Also, the addition of organic matter and cultivation that is judiciously applied, not overly cultivated.
I see. Susie?
I just want to reiterate, there is a option or a solution to this frangipane layer that may stop you from having a healthy, vibrant garden. And just, it's daikon radish, legumes, and ryegrass. And they go deep and they break up that layer beneath. I think that's what's wrong with mine.
Yeah.
Each of those different plants provides a different benefit to the soil. So the daikon radish is the one that's going to penetrate that hard pan, that frangipane.
Sure.
How long does it take? I mean, is this a 2-year project?
I don't have enough experience with the soils here to say, but I would say it's a few years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, and we were talking, this is in the context of green manures, and I'm not sure if we defined a green manure. So let's go back for a moment and just talk about what that is.
A green manure is when you grow a crop of plants, in this case the legume and the ryegrass and the daikon, and then at the end you're going to plant or you want to use that area, you turn it into the soil. I like a spading fork over any other. I'm not too fond of rototillers because they pulverize and make the soil too fine and destroy soil structure. So a spading fork, or if you know how to do double digging with a spading shovel, then that's good. A good approach to mixing in these green manures, and then as they decompose, they provide nutrients. And the brassicas are the daikon radish is a brassica, so it also emits a volatile compound like a gas into the soil that will kill weed seeds. It's not 100%, but it will help to control some weeds.
Wow.
This is very interesting. We're getting a a little lesson, a big lesson on soil. But when we're talking about the raised beds, that would be another reason to have a raised bed is you can get in there with a digging fork and turn that over and create that. But how deep do you recommend a raised bed to be? Because you're talking about 2 feet. Is 2 feet deep enough for roots to feel happy and find a little life down in there?
For the annual vegetables, 18 inches to 2 feet is fine. And that's about what mine are, about that. And if you make them about 4 feet wide, then you can reach the center from each side of the raised bed.
Okay. Well, Preston, the soil, of course, it's buried under snow right now, and you're waiting to see what's going to happen with your green manure. But is that basically what we're doing in the winter with our soils, just waiting for spring, or are there things that we can do in the winter?
Well, I think the things you do now is plan for spring.
There you go.
Deciding on what plants you want, what seeds to order, how you want to design your garden.
Okay, so the soil is quiet, but we've got plenty going on up in our heads thinking about things, and you could be planning for what additions and amendments you're going to make to your soil as soon as it thaws out.
One of the main things you don't want to do in the spring is dig your soil or cultivate it too soon when it's wet. That is probably one of the most damaging things you can do to soil. So if it's sticky, you can do a test dig, but if it's sticky, just wait. Wait till it dries out some.
Because it loses its texture, it just wrecks it.
You make
not good for it.
You compact it.
Yes.
You make clods that are hard to break up, and then you get your rototiller out there later and break it up and make and ruin the soil
a little bit more. Yeah,
so,
all right, so that's another great tip. Don't get into your soils too early until they're dry enough to work, till they're workable.
I'm thinking also when you're talking about the life of the soil and what's going on underneath in the spring, it's still happening. Because probably, even though we're sitting here in the snow, thinking about our gardens, there's a whole life going on underneath that snow that's essential for the future.
That's right. And I think we're going to a song break shortly, but one last question about knowing when it's time to be able to work in your garden. I've heard before that you can take a handful. Tell me how you know, beyond just whether it looks wet or fairly good.
Well, what soil scientists do, they can look at the texture of the soil, this type of soil, whether it's a sandy soil, a silty clay, or loam, or whatever, is they do what's called a ribbon test. And so they take a bit of soil, and then they try to make a ribbon between their forefinger and their thumb. And if they can make a ribbon, you know, like kind of like it can peel off and stick together, then it's probably a little too sticky.
Ah.
So that would be one sign. Now, it really depends on the type of soil, because there are a few sandy loams around. One called Colburn, another one is a Selle, and then there's another one out there that are different soils than these hard pan soils that I'm talking about, which is called a Mission silt loam that is predominant in Bonner County.
And they're not as easily made into ribbons?
They'll dry out quicker, and they'll be easier to work.
So they're ready a bit earlier?
Yes.
Ah.
So this is a fascinating study in soil science, and we really appreciate hearing all about this, Preston. And we want to take a little song break, and then come back with Manuela to hear about what we can do on our creative imagination side right now. And I also want to find out, how do you fill up a garden container that's 2 feet deep? Where do you get the stuff to put in it? But we'll come back to that. Maybe it's all that compost we've been accumulating over the years. We're going to take a song break. We want you to come back. This is 88.5 KRFY. Thanks for listening to The Morning Show with Susie and Julie. And this is Garden Talk. But this song is appropriate. It's Dave Mallett. It's called The Garden Song. And we'll be right back. Enjoy the song. Right. And that was The Garden Song by Dave Mallett, appropriate song for this morning. We are here in the studios, and this is The Morning Show, and we're having our first edition of Garden Talk for 2019, and we're hoping, Julie Calamine and I are hoping, that we can have this as a regular segment, maybe every 4 weeks or every 6 weeks, because there's so much about gardens. And we have guests that are helping us. Preston told us all about soil, Dr. Preston Andrews.
Right, and our next guest, who's been sitting patiently without much input, but now we're going to get going and talking with her, is Manuela Eyring, and she has a horticulture background and also is the owner of Florescape Nursery in Sagal. So, Manuela, you have plenty of experience with gardens in the Idaho Panhandle. During break, we were just talking a bit, finishing up our discussion about soils for now, but Manuela and Preston were talking about the practice of double digging in the soil and when to do that and why it's beneficial. Manuela, can you just tell us a bit more about that, and then we'll move on to garden planning?
So, especially when you have that silt layer, or what we call it, the clay layer, in your garden, I find it really helpful in late fall to go and double dig, which means you take your spade. I prefer a pitchfork. It actually makes the work easier. And I take one scoop with the pitchfork and just flip it. I don't break it up. I leave it in those chunks, and then in the same place, I push the pitchfork in once more and get deeper that way. And again, the whole chunk that is being loosened, I leave it like that. And I turn my entire planting area that way and leave the soil in big chunks over wintertime and let the frost enter the soil and break up that silt layer. And then it just stays dormant over winter. And then in the springtime, as the soil starts to dry up and the groundwater recedes a little bit, I add some of my amendments and my compost. And now I'm fluffing the soil and spreading it and get it ready for planting.
To be clear, Manuela, do you turn the soil over, or are you basically just loosening it?
No, I actually flip my chunks. Hmm. And I leave it. I don't loosen it at that time.
I see.
I let the frost do that.
Well, it sounds like a practical and maybe a little easier approach than some of us might do. A lot of us are spading and turning and, you know, really turning and working our soil in the fall.
Turning the soil in the fall, I think, is a good practice. And as Preston said, we have so many bacteria in the soil. And the bacteria that's 2 feet down is happy down there and doesn't necessarily want to be on the very top. So I don't intermix those layers too much. I just mechanically break them up.
Makes sense. It makes sense. Well, we've had a primer in soil, haven't we, Susie? We've gotten some ideas.
Fascinating. Yes. I love thinking about the life of the soil. The other day I saw this picture on Facebook, and it was the seeds going down into the soil, sending their tap roots down. It was unbelievable. And then the little leaves came up, showing how that first 2 feet of soil is essential, because what's going on down there with the seed and how it's feeding the rest of the plant to grow. And it's really cool. So thanks for letting us know about that.
Yes. So that's our basis. We'll all need to be thinking about healthy soil. But once we're getting that under control, or even as we're working on it, we've got the excitement of gardening going on. And Manuela, what are you doing? What are you thinking about this time of the year?
Well, I'm actually thinking about the miracle that Susie just described of seed germinating. And this is the time of year where I already start to propagate. I start my seeds here in another 10 days. And if you don't have a greenhouse like I do and just work with a windowsill, you might want to be patient and wait just a bit longer.
Because we can get them going too early, and then they want to get outside and they sort of wilt and don't do well.
So if you are new to this area, I think patience is the biggest, the most important thing to have. First sunny day, we all get excited and want to go out there and start growing things. But right now, it's the time to look at catalogs. You probably are swamped with catalogs. Leaf through those. Get in touch with your gardening buddies. There's really good places in town, such as the University of Idaho Extension Office. And the other organization is the Bonner County Garden Association that is starting their Master Gardener program soon. And those are two good places to find a lot of knowledge about the climate, other gardeners. I refer to them as plant junkies. Pace yourself.
A time for education, planning, dreaming, educating.
Exactly, yes.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Bonner County Garden Association. They have a Master Gardeners program that could be for someone who has been gardening or someone brand new to gardening. And also the U of I Bonner County Extension, you were mentioning something too that's coming up, some kind of certification or classes that they might be having. I know they have that new center out on Boyer.
They're having their Master Gardener classes beginning probably the end of the month or early February, and it will be at the new UI Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center.
Nice.
On Boyer.
And that is a Master Gardeners program, and the Bonner County Gardeners is termed something else, right? It's not exactly Master Gardeners.
They call it the membership course. Okay. Yeah. But they're using the same textbook and follow that curriculum. It's the Bonner County Garden Association is really a wonderful social group as well. Throughout the year, they have events where they talk about all kinds of garden topics. They have potlucks and
they sponsor the garden tour, which is a not to be missed tour.
So it's especially if you're new to the area, not necessarily new to gardening, but new to the area, and you want to get in touch with other gardeners, it's a wonderful venue.
So, how it's, I know one thing that the Bonner County Gardener Association does, if you had a problem with a plant, you could actually call someone. They have people on call that you can call with a problem in your garden, and they have experts that can help you. I'm sure the extension agents, the Extension University of Idaho Extension, also has that place where you can go and get help, because sometimes you feel like a friend is a good person to talk to, but sometimes you want a little bit more expertise. And I know both of these organizations have consultation options.
Exactly, yes. And University of Idaho, the Extension Office, you can actually bring in soil samples, plant samples, and they can help you positively identify that. And they're listed, both of them are listed in phone books, or if you Google them, I don't have the phone numbers in my head.
No, it's all right, because they are easy to find.
And the Extension Office is right out by the fairgrounds.
All right. Well, Manuela, there are all sorts of ways that we can garden here in the area, and it can be as tiny as an herb on your windowsill or as large as a great big veggie garden out in the backyard. And let's just sort of talk about how that works and what you run into in your business. It's quite a progression of what one can do.
Yeah, the sky is the limit here, and size definitely matters. I mean, do you just have one small 10-inch pot of basil in your windowsill, or are you planting a 50-foot by 50-foot vegetable garden? And especially if you're newer to gardening in general or newer to vegetable gardening, I think to start out small and easy is better. It's more rewarding because it can get frustrating if you plant things and then they don't flourish. And when it comes to planting a vegetable garden, I always like to separate cool weather crops and warm weather crops. I find people get very excited with the first sunny days and they want to plant their tomatoes. And then we have three more weeks of winter here. And
frost.
And those poor tomatoes, they don't like it.
Yeah, so.
So to start out with your peas and cabbages and carrots and beets, I mean, there's so many plants that actually need cooler temperatures and can withstand a frost. To start out with them, that gives you an opportunity to go out in your garden, see what's going on. How is my soil doing? Do I have a lot of weeds this year?
So you're saying start small. Pay attention to the seasons of the vegetables that you select. And I imagine take care of the ones that you do plant. That's a problem for me.
Exactly, yeah. And leave those tomatoes in our greenhouses. Same with cucumbers and all the squashes. They love warm soil and warm nights.
A bit ago, you mentioned seed catalogs and finding the right seeds or the seeds that inspire you, what you love to eat the most. But what some plants, it's harder to start with seeds here, especially in a shorter growing season. I don't know which zone we're in, but I don't think it's super long. It's not like the Yakima Valley or anything. So some plants are more important to grow or to maybe start inside as seedlings, and others you can put the seeds right in the ground. The thing I noticed about seed catalogs, and you can tell me if this is true, is a lot of times they have very clear directions. Some of these seed catalogs are like encyclopedias on gardening. So have you found that?
And yeah, seed catalogs definitely vary in information. And I don't necessarily have a favorite seed catalog. But you want to, when you purchase seeds, you want to make sure that there is at least an expiration date on your seeds. You might want to check out the return policy with the company. So I look for somebody that's reputable, rather than just a cheap seed that I see in a box store. And that has been on the shelf a few years too long.
Sure. Not be as suitable for our area as what our local nursery would know about.
You mentioned zoning, and this area is a USDA Zone 5. And then we have a lot of microclimates. If you go down to Kerrywood, it's definitely colder there, more longer winter than if you're in Hope, where spring starts sooner and they're probably an entire zone warmer than the rest of us. Yes. So be aware of your microclimate.
And just a note to everyone that we've got a wonderful resource in the Bonner County Library in terms of books about plant materials, books about planting, our climate, etc. And Preston did mention a resource that we might like to use for soils. And Preston, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's Building Soils for Better Health. And that's available online and probably at the library.
Yeah, Magda. I think it might be Building Soils for Better Crops, but it will definitely relate to health. And it is available online. It can be downloaded.
Oh, for free?
Yes, free.
Nice.
It's free.
That's very nice.
And it is part of the USDA Sustainable Agriculture Research and Extension, Research and Education Program.
All right.
I wanted to just talk a little bit about, you mentioned having a pot of basil on your windowsill. There are container gardens. There's so many varieties of ways that you can garden. Some people say, I don't have any land. Do you have a patio? Do you have anything that you can put out? Sometimes if you're in an apartment building, you can talk to the landlord, say, can we start a little garden? So what are some of the different things to consider when you're thinking about container, freestanding raised beds that have wooden sides? Or, you know, what are some of the parameters? And we did want to talk a little bit about how do you fill those up, those containers?
So I start with the container, and I look at the container and what it's made of. Is it made of clay or plastic or wood? Because that tells me how much water I'm going to lose throughout the season, because it unglazed clay will evaporate water through the sides of the pot. And then filling it with soil is depends on the size. If it's just a 10-inch pot, I want the best soil in there, because it's going to be root-bound very quickly and there's not a lot of space. But if I have a box that is, and they sell them here in town, they're about 2 feet deep and they look like they're about 4 by 8 feet. It's a lot of soil and a lot of weight. So I guess it depends on what you're growing in it, doesn't it?
I think that can be a difficult situation, and I found that myself personally. And most of the soil that I like to use is from my own land, because I know the condition of the soil. But you should really know the condition of the soil that you're purchasing, and that's difficult to find out that information. I won't deny that at all. But, you know, you want a combination of soil and organic matter, and then you can use other materials. You can buy the coconut core moss, sphagnum moss, peat moss. Various things can be mixed in to kind of extend the volume of your raised bed.
Okay.
And I find that if you have to garden in a container, you probably don't have land with your own soil. And if you also don't have a pickup truck, you're looking at bagged material. And so I usually recommend to go with a potting soil that is bagged, because it has been mixed and formulated to be used in containers. So if you don't have access to actual topsoil and actual ground,
and an easy way to start, too. Yeah. An easy way to get going. Exactly. You don't have to try and figure out where your topsoils come from and where what you're going to need to add right away anyway.
It's exactly.
Nice starting. Well, Susie, if a person has absolutely no access to a garden, what do they do?
Well, Sandpoint has a community garden, and we'll just throw out right now, you can rent a spot. It's super affordable. They provide water all year long. It's over near the Sandpoint Event Center, Pine and Boyer, kind of on that corner there. It's the Sandpoint Community Garden Center. It's sponsored by Parks and Recreation, and you can go to their website at sandpointcity.gov, I think it's called, and find, or you can call 208-263-3613. They're taking applications right now for those, I don't know, 50 garden spots, and I do know that they dedicate about 7 of those spots to the food bank, which is really cool. And so everyone can participate in some way. And you never know. I remember driving by and seeing those big red tomatoes, and they're huge. And we can't wait, can we?
Yes, it's a tempting sidewalk walk when you go by and just want to lean in and nibble on a pea or something. But we don't do that.
Nope.
Those are people's food. And the other, I will say one additional thing about the Sandpoint Community Garden, and it's that is also a social activity, and it's also an area for learning, because folks get together and talk about what they're doing in their gardens, and it can really encourage folks that are learning about gardening in Sandpoint.
I always thought they should have garden parties with a band, potluck, picnic, kind of fun things. And they maybe they do. I don't know. So we have a few more minutes left. This is 88.5 KRFY. You're listening to the Wednesday morning show, and we're having garden talk with our two guests, Manuela Eyring and Preston Anders.
Yes.
Hi.
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 And we're talking all things garden. And what I was thinking while you've been informing us and inspiring us and getting us excited about the future not too far ahead is we want to do garden talk again. And you guys are perfect people to continue this conversation. We'll talk later about that possibility to come in again and continue.
Well, as we are coming to a close, I'm just wondering if either of you have any thoughts about important topics we've missed this morning that we ought to be thinking about right now. Manuela, what are we missing? Is there anything else we should be on top of right now?
Talking plants, we can do that forever. There's so many things that can be addressed that there's concerns or sharing excitement, successes and failures. But it's gardening, your plants, soil, everything is alive. And having that approach that it's a life form and it needs a minimal amount of your attention and your love, and that's the biggest part for success, to accept that it's life.
Living and that we love it and it's supporting us and we're supporting it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Great comment. Preston, any final thoughts for this morning?
I think I would just emphasize 4 points. First is add organic matter to your soil. It's a food for the plants and the microorganisms in the soil. Don't work the soil when it's wet. Don't get too eager to get out there and dig it up. Mulch during the growing season, and then grow a green manure crop in the fall.
What a nice summary for us all to think more about the health of our soil. And it too is living, all those little billions and trillions of guys down there helping us.
What a beautiful thought. I'm taking that one home with me. So thank you so much, both of you, for coming in and starting off the growing season and the gardening season with Garden Talk here at 88.5 KRFY. That's Manuela Eyring, master gardener, horticulturist, and owner of Florescape Nursery out in Sagal, and Dr. Preston Andrews, professor of horticulture from Washington State University.
Thank you very much for
having
us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick musical break. And this is Guy Clark's Homegrown Tomatoes. Just thought I'd throw that one in. And we'll be right back with some community events. Stay with us. This is The Morning Show. And that was Guy Clark, Homegrown Tomatoes. And we just finished our first edition of Garden Talk here in the studios. And I'm here with Julie Calamine. And that was really fun, wasn't it, Julie?
Susie, that was really fun. And it's got me so excited about thinking about plants and vegetables for next year. And I'm going to run out and get seed catalogs.
Oh, good. Do you have a favorite?
Actually, I have a couple. One is Johnny's, which many of us get around here. And I also like Irish Eyes. Those are great catalogs.
Cool. Good to know. So I just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. This is our community radio station. We are community-supported, listener-supported, commercial-free community radio for North Idaho. And if you want to become a member, you want to make a donation, you can go to our website, krfy.org. You can also go to our website and hear this Garden Talk, this first edition of Garden Talk. We did record it, and it will be as a podcast on the same website, krfy.org.
Yes, in case you missed any of the really easy and understandable points our guests made about getting started and what we can be doing to be good gardeners.
That was a great class and inspiring, and I know both of us are going to get going in our thinking anyways. It's a wonderful time to just imagine that beautiful garden coming up. Tomorrow on the morning show, just to let you know, hosts Jim Healy and Jack Peterson, they will be taking a backward glance at singers, musicians, and songwriters who passed in 2018 and hearing some really good music. They both love music, and so they'll be telling us some great stories about that.
I need to listen to that because mm-hmm. I trust those two and their music instincts. They are great.
Yeah, they both have music shows. Jim has the folk show, and Jack last night did his show live, and it was live and local, or the Norwester, he calls it. So both of those will be in tomorrow for the morning show on Thursday, and then next week. Why don't you tell us?
Sure. Next Tuesday, we will have a pre-recorded show, but it's a great one, and you should tune in because it's local arborist and birder Rich Del Carlo, joined by Brian Baxter, who is a wildlife biologist, I believe. Anyway, he does tracking, identifying birds, habitat. He's a great guy. So we're going to talk about birds and animals of winter.
Sounds fascinating. And next week on the Wednesday morning show, you can join myself, Susie Prez, and Chris Bessler. And our guests will be Superintendent Sean Woodward and Chief Financial Officer Lisa Halls from the Lake Ponderay School District. They are the taxing district for the upcoming school levy, and they'll be coming in to tell us about that. And you know, Julie, I thought we could go into some of the other things. You can go to KRFY.org and look at upcoming events, because there are plenty of them. Don't forget the Native Plant Kinnick Society Native Plant. They have a talk on Saturday. What time is that talk?
That starts at 9:45. And you're correct, Susie. There is a ton going on. So everyone ought to access Sandpoint Online or our own events calendar, because it's a busy week and weekend.
I want to go out with a song in honor of Martin Luther King Day and in honor of service, because that's what it's all about, folks. It makes a better world. We appreciate your listening, and thanks, Julie, for being here with me today.
Good to be with you, Susie.
Okay, this is Dion, Abraham, Martin, and John. Enjoy your day.